This is Northland Notebook Live, on air, online, and on demand. On today's program, a friend in the storm and facing a crisis and finding hope. It's Thursday's broadcast. Joining me first on today's program is Cheryl Ricker. She grew up in Canada, majored in creative writing, attended Bible College where she met her husband Dwight. They now live in Minnesota and have two sons, and she's the author of the new book, A Friend in the Storm. The book is published by Zondervan. Cheryl Ricker, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ted. It's great to be here.
Good to have you on the program this afternoon. And where do you live in Minnesota?
I'm in Rochester, actually.
Rochester, Minnesota. Okay.
You bet.
You lived, you grew up in Canada. How did you end up in Minnesota?
Oh, well, we've traveled around to a few different spots, but after Bible College and I met an American husband, he kind of drew me to the States, and he got a job at the Mayo Clinic, so we just kind of located here.
Okay. And how did you meet Dwight?
I met him across the aisle at Bible College. I still remember the day.
You do? the exact day?
No, I just remember the moment. I never remember the exact day.
Okay. And this was in class?
Right.
And what class was this?
Actually, marriage and family class.
So what was it about Dwight that caught your eye?
A couple of different things.
Okay.
One of the things, too, is I had been watching him during worship time, and I loved how he worshipped the Lord with all of his heart. It reminded me of David.
Okay.
So I really thought, this is the kind of man that I want, someone who just seems on fire for God, and that's exactly what he has been, so absolutely.
So Dwight seemed like Mr. Right.
Yep, he did.
Okay.
And he still is Mr. Right.
would you say that it was then love at first sight?
I would say it was interest at first sight.
Interest, okay.
Yeah.
And was it mutual? Did he have an interest in you?
Yes, he did, actually.
Okay.
He liked me too, so it always works out better when it's that way.
Okay. And then you met, and you dated, and you got married, and all of that?
Right.
And you have now two boys, right?
Ages 14 and 10.
Okay, very good. Your book is titled A Friend in the Storm. What inspired you, Cheryl, to write this book? And what does that mean, the title, A Friend in the Storm?
A friend in the storm. That's what Christ is to us when we go through anything. He's there for us, whether we go through a storm or not. He wants to be our friend. And that's what I was to a gal that I met at MOPS, Mothers of Preschoolers, way back in 2005. And here's how it happened. We were just going around in a circle, introducing ourselves, and everybody was just talking about their summer. And then she said something where we all stopped and caught our breath for a minute. She said, "My name's Chantel, and I have stage 4 lung cancer."
Wow.
And, none of us knew what to say. And
yeah.
I just knew. My heart went out to this young mother with two little girls. And afterwards, you know, she connected with me, and I connected with her. And she asked me if I would be interested in meeting with her in her home, probably knowing that she wasn't going to always make it to the meetings. And so I said yes, but I was terrified.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I would say because this was new to me, walking this kind of a journey. And that's when the Lord prompted me that I could write her poetry. I knew that I had written poetry and I love writing. And I thought, okay, some people bring casseroles. I can bring a poem and see. I didn't even know if she'd like it. Mm-hmm. But it turned out she loved the poem. So every visit I would bring her another one. And one day she asked if I would read them at her funeral.
Really? Wow.
Yes. And I was so not prepared for that day because I didn't realize that we were that close.
Yeah.
And I said, yes. And I did. I read a few of them for her funeral. And it so happened to be that a month after that, there was a Mount Hermon Christian Writers Conference. I had never been, but I'd heard about it, and I went to California, and I actually thought I was going to get a children's book published that I wrote back in high school, because some friends said, you've got to get this published. It was about a skunk. And I went with that. And I realized that it stunk, because I didn't really know how to write children's books at the time. There's different types of, you know, sometimes they look for short ones, and mine was really long.
Yeah.
And they liked the rhythm and the rhyme. They loved that, but it was just too long for a children's book.
Okay.
So they said, do you have anything else to show us? And different ones said, you know, you've got some great poems. I had just brought them along because you're supposed to bring everything you have.
Right.
And so I did, and they're like, wow, you could really minister with these poems. They're so rich with truth. And so, you know, that was in 2005, and it's just come out this fall, so it's been quite a long process, but I've been working on it full-time since then.
What was that first meeting like when you met with her, and this was going to be your sort of what you were going to do at the meetings or at the visitations?
Yeah, the first meeting was, you know, she has a way of making people feel really comfortable, and yet I'm supposed to be doing that. I figured it was my job to be there and minister to her, but she ended up ministering more to me. And we just talked about family stuff and that kind of thing. It was pretty normal and natural.
Why did she choose you to be part of this?
You know, I don't really know. I know that I was leading a Bible study in my home at the time, and I think that she knew about that and just wanted to have a little bit of time spiritually with me where we talked and prayed and shared from the Word. And that's really all I know about that. I've wondered that same thing. Why me?
And then you met with her every week after that?
I wouldn't say every week. Sometimes it was in a week, and then we'd skip a couple. It wasn't the most regular, but we just tried to keep that going right up to the end.
And was it the poems you wrote, were they difficult or challenging for you to write, or did they come easy?
I think they came pretty easily as far as the topics go, but as far as crafting the words, like the words themselves had to be so perfect. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and when I looked for the soothing sounds, I wanted them to reach into her heart, and I started finding a pattern where everything was 8 lines, and that's really a short amount of space to say a whole bunch of, you know, truth.
Yeah.
Like there are each little nuggets of truth that just kind of bring peace. That's what she said. I felt peace when you read them to me. And so I would think about heaven and things that I thought would be relevant to her. And I always prayed about it. And I looked in the Word of God, what should I do today? You know, how can I write a poem today that's going to be the perfect one for her?
Of the poems you wrote, Cheryl, are there some that you remember that resonated the most with her?
Probably the ones about heaven.
Did she always respond the same way to each poem, or was it different every time you had a different poem? What was her response?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought of that. I think she always seemed to love the amount of peace that they brought her, and I'm sure, I remember there was a couple that ministered more to her. I don't remember what they were after all this time, but I remember her saying, like when she picked the one she wanted me to read at her funeral, those were the ones that she really especially liked.
After she passed on and you did not have these meetings to go to, these visitations, what was that like for you? Was that difficult to get over that?
Well, and this might sound cold and callous, but not really.
No.
Just had a peace that she was with the Lord. She was so excited, you know, about her getting to see the Lord. She'd been suffering for a long time. And by the time I met her, she had been battling cancer for a while before that. And so, you know, and I knew that this was something she would want me to do with this book, too. And so I became more excited and focused on actually getting that published. And I went through a lot of rejections before ever the door opens that the Lord just said, okay. And so that was just, it helped me get my mind off of, you know, her and whatever else was happening that might have been difficult in my life.
My guest this afternoon from Rochester, Minnesota, is Cheryl Ricker, and she is the author of the new book, A Friend in the Storm. book is published by Zondervan. Who is your intended audience here? What is your target reader that you're trying to reach?
I would like to help anybody that's going through severe kinds of grief or crisis situations, because I figure if I can reach those more desperate situations, even, you know, people who are terminal, people who have who know that they just lost a loved one, then it's going to, even suicide situations, if I can reach those people with comfort, then I'll be able to get the other people who have lost a job or who are just, you know, sick in a different kind of way. So, yeah.
How many poems are in the book?
There are 45.
Okay, of the 45, do you have some favorites, personal favorites?
Yeah. I like the one called You.
Okay.
You're forever on my mind, and in your presence I rejoice. Singing out your name with angels, all your sweetness fills my voice. Keeping loved ones in my keeping, I embrace a constant calm. Whole and holy I will hold you ever after in my palm.
I'm looking at a poem on page 87. It's called Heaven Inside. Can you tell me about that poem?
Yep.
Read it for us.
Sure can. And as you can see from the one that I just recited to you, most of my poems are from Christ's point of view.
Sure.
Because a lot of times people will try to minister and say, I know what you're feeling, but they really don't. Only Christ understands. So that's why I decided to write from his point of view.
Sure. Okay.
So Heaven Inside. Now this is a response back to Christ, because this book takes you on a journey, and it just goes through the different stages of grief, and Heaven Inside is when we're making some peace with all of the different things that Christ has been saying, all Bible-based things that he's been saying.
Okay.
So we reach a point of more acceptance, which is one of the five stages of grief.
Okay.
Heaven Inside. You waltzed inside my lonely room and snuffed out doubts and welcome gloom. Beyond these window panes I see a glimpse of wide eternity. Beyond my flesh that aches to grasp your healing truth, my soul you clasp. All thanks to love, you found my start. The sound of home awakes my heart.
Are you still writing poetry then? Will there be a sequel?
I'll always be writing poetry, but I have to say that with just the publication of this book, I've been sort of focusing more on ministering with the poems that I have and just using this book as a resource that I'm wanting to get into people's hands to help other people. And so I'm looking forward to just having a whole lot of time to write some poems in the near future, maybe for another book. I don't know.
The poems in this book, are those all the poems you read to her, or are there more poems than you selected from all those
poems?
Yes,
there were a lot more, and these are also ones that I added afterwards, too, because in order for this book to have the continuity and flow that makes it so unique to almost read like a story, with the quotes and scripture that are, you know, on both sides of it all the way through, I had to, you know, modify the ones I had and write a whole bunch of new ones.
When you think about poetry and look at where it is in our culture, do you think our culture widely accepts poetry, or is it becoming something from a thing of the past?
That really all depends who you talk to. I think poetry will always be around. It's, you know, nothing says it like a song, and poems encapsulate truth in a way that reaches the heart and encourages the heart to change in ways that other media cannot do. And so it helps you to look at life in a fresh new way. And so, you know, there's many different styles of poetry.
Yeah.
And mine, you know, some people who don't normally like poetry actually like mine, and that's kind of a neat thing. It's kind of poetry for the non-poet in that sense. It's, somebody said it's like 45 greeting cards all put together into one tight, light, little package.
What do you personally like about the poetry that you write?
I just like that it's something that people can understand, and yet it still flows. It has soothing sounds, and it has memorable images. Because when people are going through a difficult time, they need something that they can hold on to, you know. And so with this kind of poetry, they can just open it up and read it again and even start to memorize it, like I have for most of mine, is they can just have that, and it's speaking so personally to them.
My guest this afternoon, my first guest on the program, is Cheryl Ricker, and she is the author of the new book, A Friend in the Storm. The book is published by Zondervan. Describe the cover of the book to our listeners. Also, give us an idea of how the book is formatted, how it's intended to be used.
Okay. I love talking about the cover. It's made out of it's a unique cover, made out of linen that's a very light greenish color. It's with a two-tone green. The binding is a darker green, and then the main part is light green, and it has copper foil stamping on it. And what that is, it's a shiny metallic stamping that says the title and my name, and has this beautiful tree that's flowing right off of the page with the leaves. And to answer the other part of your question about how it's put together, it has a special quote, verse, poem pattern throughout the whole thing. And it begins with a poem called No, because denial is one of the first stages of grief. And I wanted to grab the reader, because a lot of times when we go through pain, we're wondering what is going on.
Yeah.
And so it sort of says that people are trying to help you, but then they hear a voice of comfort. And then it's that wants to show you something more, .. Leads you to a nice little quote on the other page, and that's by Charles Spurgeon, "When filled with holy truth, the mind rests." And Spurgeon's a pretty respectable leader. I always tried to pick people that were respectable leaders, that were accepted in, you know, Christendom, generally speaking, throughout, and then have a verse that just matches with that so perfectly, and then goes into the poem. And even that next poem connects to the following quote, verse, poem all the way through.
What kind of response are you receiving on the book? What are people saying about your book?
They're thanking me. They're saying that this has helped me personally, and then they're saying it's helped my friends, too, because it's the kind of thing they've passed on. And I'm finding a lot of interesting things, like even some non-believers have bought the book to share with people they know that would appreciate this kind of thing, and in the meantime, they've read it for themselves. And then some people are using it to share their faith with their unsaved family and relatives, and people are buying bunches to bring to funerals.
Oh.
Yeah, and so I'm just thinking, you know, that might be a new way to reach out to people, because it really, with the focus on heaven at the end and everything.
Right. And it's always hard to, funerals for me sometimes are hard because you don't know what to say and it's awkward. And
exactly.
This would be helpful in that regard. In your book, you write that God wants to lead us through our pain. Why doesn't God, you're not God, so you can't answer it, I guess, but
no.
From your perspective, why do you think God simply doesn't remove the pain?
Well, I know that he will someday remove the pain, and that's why we're supposed to fix our eyes on things above. But in the meantime, we have pain. Even Christ had pain in this life, and we know that he understands our pain because he went through it. And we can be confident that, you know, he's got a plan, and we can't really know how to trust him unless it's something that we can't see. Because faith, you know, is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And I actually have a poem about faith, too, that says, "True faith is never lame or blind. It's faith deep seen by souls. Though eyes may take in rays of light, they're still just two black holes. The soul that sees me sees inside my spirit-led dimensions. The evidence of brand new lives reveals unseen dimensions." And I kind of butchered it at the beginning.
Sorry.
I know I didn't say it right.
Didn't even notice it. Continuing on with that question I gave you, in what ways, then, does God help you get through the pain? If he doesn't remove it, and it's not till in the hereafter, in what ways can God or does God help you get through the pain that you are suffering?
Yep. He helps us when we partner with him with it, when we give it to him. And he sometimes, you know, he can heal us too. And I believe in asking for healing. And then the times that he doesn't, it's like I was saying, we just have to trust him, and that's where faith comes in. And we need to just say that in this journey of life, I'm going to trust you today with where I'm at and keep moving forward knowing that it's going to be gone.
Is that trust something that you learn to do or what?
It absolutely is, Ted. It's something that every day when we wake up that we have to learn to keep our eyes on him and not on the waves, or else we'll start to sink.
So when God is silent, and there are times that he appears to be silent, and we often interpret that as maybe he has abandoned us or abandonment, how can a person learn to persevere in the midst of this silence?
Well, it is a process to learn to trust him, and it's not easy. But those are the times, those dark times. As a lot of us look back to them in our lives, we know that we can see that he was there, even if at the time we didn't. Sometimes we feel him, but we need to just keep on believing and also, you know, encourage our own hearts by getting around people who will help fan the flames of our faith. And we need to do the same for others because we're the body of Christ. We're not just an island, and we need to help each other by having words of encouragement. And that's why the Bible says to encourage one another. We need to do that and help each other through the dark times because we're all going through a different struggle, and it's just as real to each one of us. It's just different.
My guest of this afternoon is Cheryl Ricker, and she is the author of the new book, A Friend in the Storm. The book is published by Zondervan. Have you written other books as well, or is this your very first book?
No, this is my first baby.
Very first baby. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think about it yourself? What do you think about the book?
Well, really excited about it. Mm-hmm. I just know that God is the one who opened the door from the beginning. And so that even when doors don't seem to open along the way that I want them to, I can just be convinced that if he opened the door, he started the work with this, he'll be faithful to complete the work. And so I'm excited.
The book, as you said, is a collection of poems and you had used in your visitations with this lady who had a terminal illness. Did you write these from things that you have experienced in your own personal life?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
Did you write these then from things that you experienced in your own
life,
personal?
In my life, I've had different things that I've needed to draw comfort from, and I have in times battled depression, circumstantial depression that's stemmed from different things, and even my husband has, yes, the one that I met at Bible College, because Christians go through problems just like anybody else, and I think people who do go through that themselves are really then forced to drop at the feet of the cross and say, Father, help me find my way through this. And it's after and as we go through that we are able to then comfort other people with the comfort we ourselves have received. So, yeah.
There is a tendency by most of us to blame others or blame God or not take responsibility when circumstances don't go our way. How can we break what appears to be a habit here, that we're always trying to blame somebody?
Well, first of all, to confess that as a problem, that we need to not blame, but to own our own stuff and to know that none of us is perfect. As we start to catch ourselves, you know, judging someone else for what they have done to us, and I have had things done to me, and so I know this is true. I just need to continually forgive and love because we're commanded to. If God has forgiven me of everything, then I can forgive my neighbor. I can forgive my, you know, whoever, fill in the blank. And so it's just necessary. It's a matter of the will, and it's a matter of asking God for his strength because we can't do it in our own complete strength. We need his strength to help us forgive.
You also say in your book that that fear has a pain that will sap our energy. We know that stress is harmful to our bodies, but fear is part of the stress that we go through. How can one manage this fear? And for yourself, what do you do when you feel fearful and it's sapping your energy?
You just hit on my biggest one, okay. Is fear that I've battled with throughout my life. And the only way to do it is to step out of the boat, keep your eyes on Christ, and keep on, you know, asking him to help you. And a lot of your fears go away when you do that, as you walk them out. You can make the fears worse by, you know, avoiding the thing that you're afraid of indefinitely till the day you die, you could do that. But you have to, if you want to follow your dreams, like I did in writing this book, then you're going to have to be willing to do whatever it takes, you know, to face your fears. And so I know any of our listeners out there can do that, our friends that are listening. You can face your fear with God's help when you give it to Him, when you throw Him all your pressing worries and thoughts and testy weights, mass confusions, past intrusions, throw Him all your human hates. Letting go, you'll find true lightness from the one who takes your shame. He's a pro at trading burdens. After all, that's why He came.
Yeah.
And I didn't say that anything like it says in the book, because it's written from Christ's point of view. But I changed it, so you know, it's basically saying the same thing.
Do you find yourself sometimes just break into poetry when you're talking to people?
You know, it's happened one time when I was speaking at the Christian bookstore, and they invited me to come in and talk to the whole bookstore, and it felt like everything that I said came out in poetry that day, and it was in a humorous fashion, so everyone was in stitches.
So poetry can be funny, then.
Well, I have written some funny poems, too, and it was completely different than this kind of peace-giving poetry, but... Yeah, and that's another thing I could do with my poetry is do that.
My guest, Cheryl Ricker, and she is the author of the new book, A Friend in the Storm. It's published by Zondervan. Cheryl, is there a website we can direct our listeners to so they can find out more about your books and what you're doing?
Absolutely. www.afriendinthestorm.com. And on there, too, you can take a test under the Hope section that will show you if you're depressed. At this time of the year, a lot of people are depressed. And you can find a lot of information of comfort and links to other helpful resources.
Thanks, Cheryl. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ted.
Blessings.
Blessings to you, too.
Bye-bye. Northland Notebook is also podcast and archived online at wwjc.com. We'll be back after our break at the bottom of the hour, Facing a Crisis and Finding Hope. On tomorrow's broadcast, Mothers of the Bible, and we'll talk with William Murray about religious liberty issues. That's coming up on tomorrow's broadcast.
SRN News, I'm Greg Clugston in Washington. A longtime New York congressman is trying to get his House colleagues to reject a censure vote and to instead give him a milder punishment for his ethical misconduct. Chuck Rangel has his work cut out for him since an ethics panel has already voted 9-1 in favor of censure. The top House Republican calls it nonsense. John Boehner is talking about a House vote today on a measure that would let tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans expire. It has no chance of passing in the Senate. Negotiators, meanwhile, are working on a deal that would continue the tax cuts for all Americans. It's a new sign that the tight job market may be easing a bit. November marked a 2-year low for the number of people applying for initial unemployment benefits. The slowing of layoffs and a solid month for retailers are the latest evidence of a strengthening economy in the final months of the year. This is SRN News.
And we are back with Thursday's live broadcast, the Northland Notebook, on air, online, on demand. On tomorrow's broadcast, Mothers of the Bible, and we'll talk with William Murray about religious liberty issues. That's coming up on Friday's broadcast. And joining me next on the program from Orlando, Florida, is Robin Den Besten and her daughter, Grayson. Grayson and her father, Chris, are authors of the new book, Grayson's Song, A Journey of Facing Crisis and Finding Hope. Robin and Grayson, good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
And how are things in Orlando?
Actually, things are wonderful. It's a nice, crisp day outside, so we don't get to see a lot of that.
Okay, now, when you say crisp, what are you talking, 60 degrees?
I think the lows this morning were about 40, it's about 60 now, so it's sunny, though, so it's quite pleasant.
Yeah, we may see 10 below zero tonight.
Oh, my goodness.
my son is flying down there on Monday. He'll be down there for about a week in the Orlando area.
Oh, he'll love it.
Lucky,
it's so nice.
Lucky him.
Yeah, lucky him. I know.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about your story. 2 years ago, Christmas Eve, your daughter's heart was only functioning at 20% capacity. Take us back to that time and place and what was going on.
Yes, this Christmas Eve, it will be 2 years. And 2 years ago, and what happened was Grayson, our daughter, who was 9 and a half at the time, just wasn't feeling well kind of that week before Christmas. And I had taken her that Monday to the pediatrician, and they had sort of sent us home saying, oh, she has what everyone else has. Here's a antibiotic and some breathing treatments, and off you go.
Yeah,
and by Wednesday morning, which was Christmas Eve day, Grayson just was lifeless and not doing well. And so I called in, and we brought her back to the pediatrician, and it was there that they couldn't get a temp on her or anything, and they said, you know, we're going to take a ride in the ambulance. And truly, I thought, you know, what does she have, severe pneumonia? Yeah. What could it be?
It's something
and
everybody has, you know.
Yeah, you know what?
Well, thanks a lot.
So we arrived at the hospital, and my husband, Chris, met us there, and it was very quickly they gathered us and said, you know, we are all in agreement that your daughter is very ill, and it's her heart. And it came, of course, as a great shock to us, and we were very confused. But immediately you think, well, what do we do to fix that? You know, what's going on? And what happened, her diagnosis was actually called viral myocarditis, and a random virus, like a cold virus that all of us get, had entered her body and had settled in her heart. And her very strong and healthy immune system was attacking that virus, and she was dying. And
how common is something like this? Is this something because of something like strep or what that causes this?
You know, it's not that common, although you do, of course, once you're going through it, hear of more cases. You know, I mean, it's something I'd never heard of before, but it is common. Any number of viruses can do that. They can also attack other organs. But the heart, of course, being the main organ that keeps everything else going.
Grayson, you're there. You're 9 and a half years old. What was going through your head? What were you thinking about all this? Were you conscious?
Well, I had been very sick, and I hadn't really been able to walk, and all I really wanted to do was lay down.
Yeah.
And I knew something was wrong with me, but right then I was just feeling so bad that I didn't really know at the moment. And I remember always wanting water or something to drink, and I was like always really thirsty. But I don't really remember what was happening, except that I was sick.
Well, Robin, at what point, what did you do next? Things look terribly wrong here. What happened next?
Yes, well, once they gave us our diagnosis, they told us that one-third of the people with this diagnosis will live and will recover. Really? One-third of the people will die, and one-third of people need a heart transplant.
Not very
and
good
they said these next 24 to 48 hours are extremely important to see which one-third Grayson will be.
Yeah.
And by Christmas Eve night, Grayson had taken visitors, and they had moved her up to the CICU. But about 6:30, 7 o'clock, she really went downhill, and they had to intubate her, and then they ended up...
What does that mean?
Yes, intubating is just, that's a good question. I didn't know either. But it's essentially she could not get enough oxygen. Okay. So they put a breathing tube in and a machine breathes for her. Uh-huh. And but even after doing that, they knew that her heart was just so very weak. And upon arrival at the ER, she had a blood clot the size of a gumball in her left ventricle of her heart. So it had not been perfusing the blood out, so it caused a blood clot. And they said, you know, we really suggest that we want to put her on the heart-lung machine, which is also called ECMO. Yeah. And that goes in through two veins in your neck, the jugular and the carotid artery.
Right.
And it basically takes the load off your heart and pumps for you this machine. So you can't stay on a machine like that for very long because it does not mimic the heart well enough to keep all the other organs going. So, but they said, you know, we want to do this for at least a few days and see if she improves. Yeah. And I cannot tell you, that was about midnight on Christmas Eve going into Christmas Day, and they let us back in to see her, and I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, any parent, to see their child lying lifeless on a bed with a sheet over them and a machine now pumping for their heart. But it was devastating in the moment.
Well, before all of this, before Christmas, before she came down with what the doctors first said was something everybody was getting, mm-hmm. what was she, a healthy girl, no heart problems at all?
Completely healthy,
A typical kid.
Yep, typical kid, very healthy, and this was not a congenital heart issue. It was simply a virus
had
settled.
This happened over just a matter of a few days, correct?
Well, yes, the doctors, you know, they're not sure. They said the virus could have entered her body, you know, several weeks before, and she was just so healthy that it took that many weeks to finally, show on the outside and the way she was feeling.
So what options did you have here at this point? You're waiting to see?
That's interesting. We had no options, and in fact, the doctor said to us, there's nothing that we can do for her at this point. And really, that's when we knew, all right, Lord, you know, there's nothing they can do, and we know that it's all up to you. And that's when you really learn very quickly to just lay it at his feet.
Okay, so you were Christians at that time?
Absolutely,
okay,
yep.
So your faith played a large part in all of this?
Absolutely, a huge part in our journey, and I don't think we could have endured it without it. And we met many people who went through different tragedies like ours in the hospital, and many of them without faith. And it's a sad thing.
For sure.
But so our options were just to wait, really. And we were praying, you know, Lord, that you would heal her. And it was very clear that she was not getting better. And I should say, the next day being Christmas, both Chris and I received the best, I call it the best Christmas gift ever, because God gave both of us the peace that passes all understanding. And I can tell you that because I'm a mother and my child was dying. And I had a peace. He didn't say to me in an audible voice, but I knew that he said, I have her in the palm of my hand and I'm not through with her yet here. And I just had a peace. He just told me she's going to be okay. And Chris experienced it, you know, in a different way.
Were you surprised that you felt that peace at this
point? I was, but at the same time, it was so divine. You don't even question it, you know. Right. And it was within the next couple of days that our doctors at our hospital here gathered us in a little room, and they said, listen, we cannot do anything for her, and her organs were all shutting down, her kidneys were shutting down, her liver, everything. And they said, Grayson's only chance for survival is if she can be flown to Gainesville, Florida, where they have a machine called the Berlin Heart, and it is made for children, and it is an artificial heart, and if she can get there and have that surgery and have that hooked into her heart, she possibly can live and wait for a heart transplant. So, of course, we said, well, absolutely, that's what we'll do. And but in that meeting, I listened very carefully because I'm a detailed person, and I listened to all the doctors had to say, and then I said, I understand everything you've said, and I had some questions, some medical things, but I said, I want you to know that Grayson is going to be all right. And one of the nurses that was in there, she just burst into tears. And I couldn't believe what I just said, but I knew that the Lord had told me that, you know.
Yeah.
So it just goes to say it is a peace that passes all understanding. It passed mine, you know. I couldn't even believe it, but I knew what I knew. So,
she went to Gainesville. The artificial heart was put in place.
That's right. It's called a Berlin heart, and they did open heart surgery with Grayson, and they sew in four cannulas into the heart, and so her native heart was still intact. And then they sew these cannulas into the heart, and from there the load is lifted off the heart, and there's a machine that sits out at the bedside, and it's basically an air compressor,
right.
And it pumps. For the heart, and it moves the blood for the heart, and there's two little, they call them VADs, that sit outside the body down by the abdomen, and you could see her blood pumping through there, but the machine was doing everything for her heart. And the beauty of this machine is that it mimics the human heart so perfectly that her kidneys returned to normal function within 2 days of the surgery, her liver returned. I mean, it was miraculous. Truly, the doctors, you know, they said, wow, we just can't believe what's going on. And not to mention Grayson had developed yet another blood clot being on the other machine when we were here in Orlando, and either part of that one or another one had broke off during the surgery for the Berlin heart and had gone to her brain, and she had suffered a stroke. And there again, they took us in a very small room, and they give you bad news in a small room and good news at the bedside. But they took my husband and I into a room and said, listen, Grayson has had a stroke, and we don't know what kind of brain function she'll have. We don't know any of this. And there again, we just had this peace and, you know, let the doctor know that we knew she was going to be all right. And sure enough, you know, they did a CAT scan. They couldn't explain the stroke and how she was okay. And we had a front row seat to miracle after miracle.
Grayson, what did you think about all of this with the artificial heart and all that was going on?
Well, when I had been on the other machine called ECMO, I hadn't been conscious, but when I was waking up and I was still on all the medication, I remembered that something had happened to me, and I knew I was sick, and I knew I was not at home.
Yeah.
And but day after day, I would kind of grow to know more, and I just, you would think that it would be tragic for someone to learn that, but God, I think, also gave me a peace.
Really?
And he just was with me through all of it, and I couldn't have done it without him.
You weren't fearful about any of this then?
Well, no. When you have him, he kind of is with you through all everything. So I wasn't scared. I knew it was in his hands.
My guests on the program this afternoon, Robin Den Besten and her daughter Grayson. Grayson and her father are authors of the new book, Grayson's Song, A Journey of Facing Crisis and Finding Hope. So, Robin, what happened next? She has the artificial heart in place. How long did she have that?
Yeah, that's an indefinite process. What they tell you is, you know, this is a wonderful machine, and now you are on the list for a heart transplant, and you will just wait. And I think that's the hardest part for any person in a hospital is waiting. And when you're a child, it's even worse. You know, you just want to go home and run and play with your dog and do normal things that kids are doing.
Were there times when it looked like there was going to be a heart available and they prepared her and then it didn't come through? Or were there cases or times when that took place?
No, there was not a time like that in our situation. Our hospital, we were at Shands in Gainesville, and they're just top-notch up there, and they're very conservative about what organs they accept for the children that are needing them. And so, no, there were not, you know, they told us later that they had turned down a couple hearts because they didn't look as good as they wanted them for her.
Sure.
And, you know, that's just the way they do it, which is fine. And a lot of people would say, well, weren't you just waiting every day for that phone call, and they were going to, you know, or come in and say we found a heart, and you're really not, because day-to-day life on this machine was life and death, really.
Sure.
And while Grayson could function and it had wheels on it so we could push it along the hall, we could go outside, and it had a battery life of 30 minutes. So sometimes we'd go outside and plug her in out, you know, where there was an outlet outside just to get some fresh air. And and we did, you know, classwork in the hospital, and just our life was turned upside down. We have two boys. One is 2 years older than Grayson, and one is 2 years younger, Brooks and Cole. And they were here in Orlando with Chris's parents during the week attending school, and then they would be up in Gainesville with us on the weekend. And two boys in a hospital on a pediatric ICU is quite interesting.
I would imagine, for sure.
Yeah.
It's even when they're not in that location. It's interesting.
Exactly, yeah. They had a basketball hoop stuck on the wall with a suction cup and would shoot hoops and, you know, made friends with all the nurses and doctors.
Sure.
But our life was truly turned upside down. And like I said, for Grayson, of course, she had medical procedures. She suffered almost daily with painful injections and all sorts of different things you cannot even imagine. And she struggled many times with, when am I going to get a heart, Mom? When can you tell me when? And at first, you know, I thought, well, I'm sure it will be soon. But soon started to take on many different definitions. And as the months went by, you don't know what to say. And we started to say, well, God's timing is perfect. We know that His timing is perfect. And the Lord taught us so many things. One of those is, be still and know that I am God. Because when you're sitting in a hospital room watching your child suffer, or you are suffering yourself, as Grayson was, Satan likes to really start to get at you. And he is the father of lies. And so for us, it was a constant battle to listen to the voice of truth and trust that the Lord had a plan, and not say, why is this happening? Why are you doing this? But what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing here? And I have to honestly say, I never, ever even thought of the question, why did you do this? Or why are you doing this, Lord? I really never did. I never got angry. I sensed that something huge was happening. And just to tell you very quickly, prior to all of this, the month before all this happened, so it would be November of 2008, Grayson has written music about Jesus and since she was young, and she sings songs and everything. And she had sung a song at her school chapel, and all the kids were, you know, praising her, and, oh, you're going to be on American Idol and this and that. And Grayson came downstairs that night at home, and she said to me, Mom, I don't want the light to shine on me. I want God's light to shine through me. And her prayer was, God, that you would use me for your glory. And this was prior to any of that. And as we were in the hospital, we began to see very clearly that God was using Grayson for his glory. And some dear friends of ours set up a website upon us arriving in Gainesville. It's called Caring Bridge. CaringBridge.com, amazing website. It's free. Anybody that's going through any type of illness can have a page on there, and you can post what's going on a daily basis, that type of thing. And people can, you know, write back to you. And so we were very encouraged by messages from people all around the world that, you know, we've never met, that would encourage Grayson, or that would share their story of how she was changing their life, or her courage was, you know, changing their life, or her faith was bringing them back to Christ, and so on. And we began to see very quickly that God was, wow, he was doing something so mighty, and you just sit back in awe, really.
Now, Robin, tell us now about when it became apparent there was going to be a heart transplant, a heart was there, about the day that the news came that there was going to be when the operation was going to take place.
Well, that, you know, I said earlier that you don't sit around waiting for that phone call, and I certainly wasn't that day. I was at our apartment nearby the hospital, and I just jumped out of the shower, and the phone rang.
Yeah.
And Chris was down here in Orlando with the boys, and it was our nurse, and she said, Robin, I think we've got a heart.
Wow.
And there I was, soppy wet. You know, I began to cry, and I thought, oh, my goodness, it's here. You know, you just don't even imagine it. And
yeah.
I called Chris, and I said, they think they have a heart. And, you know, he goes, oh, what do I do? You know, and he grabbed the boys and drove up. And then I got to the hospital, and it's funny, the night before Ted, when we were in the hospital, Grayson and I, every night, we'd, you know, do this routine. She's getting ready for bed and getting her pajamas on and whatnot. Sure. And that night, Grayson said to me, Mom, when is the heart going to come? And I said, you know, honey, I don't know, but I have this crazy feeling that it truly is so soon. I can't pinpoint it. And Easter had just happened a couple days prior to that, and everybody thought, wouldn't that be neat if the Lord brought her a heart on Easter, you know? But I knew that God wasn't bringing it Easter. Yeah. And sure enough, it was the Wednesday after Easter. And but we just rejoiced. And I told Grayson, I said, Grayson, they found a heart for you. And I'll never forget it. The sun was coming in her window, and she was just illuminated. And she just looked at me. She didn't even cry. She was just so joyful. And she said, Mom, I knew it. I knew it. And she, we took a moment to pray. And during our prayer, we were, of course, very thankful that the Lord had provided a heart. And we prayed for the family that had lost a child. She received the heart of a 15-year-old boy. We don't know how he died and or any of the circumstances, but we prayed for that family. And we had been praying for them all along because we knew somebody was going to lose a child, you know. And I can't imagine. And but in that prayer, Grayson then prayed a prayer. And let me just preface it by saying, when you're waiting for a heart transplant, they give you many details. And some of them are, by the way, you need to know that you can go down to the OR thinking that you're receiving a heart. They can cut your chest open and realize that the heart is not going to work for you. That organ, for whatever reason, now that they have it physically there, will not work for this patient. They close you back up and you're back upstairs, and you wake up and, oh my goodness, you don't have a heart. You're on this machine still.
Wow.
And Grayson knew that was a possibility.
Sure.
But in her prayer that morning, she said, Lord, thank you that you've brought a heart. And God, if things don't work out the way I want them to, I will still trust you.
Yeah.
I will still trust you. And I can't even begin to tell you what that means for a child to say, 9 and a half, to say that knowing she could be still hooked to this machine with tubes embedded in her abdomen with all kinds of crazy things going on, living in a hospital, but she fully trusted him and his plan for her. It was beautiful.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So the operation went through?
It went beautifully. It took several hours, and they would call us periodically from the OR and let us know how things were going. And she was rolled back the next morning, Thursday morning, early in the early hours of the morning. And one thing Grayson and I had discussed, she goes, Mom, when I come back, point down, because she would still be intubated now with that breathing tube coming out of surgery, you know.
Sure.
And she said, point down to my stomach so that I know that I'm no longer attached to the Berlin heart. You know, in other words, that it all worked out.
Yeah.
Let me know and tell me. And so we absolutely did that. And she was just ecstatic, but of course still intubated as you're coming off medications and such. And she came off that breathing tube very quickly. And one thing as well, Grayson knew what was going to lie ahead going into that heart transplant surgery. It is a huge recovery of, you know, coming out of a surgery like that. And she had already experienced that after the Berlin heart. And, you know, you can really start to go crazy in your mind, like, am I going to be able to endure the recovery? How am I going to do? It's very painful. There are many painful parts of recovery. And but she was amazing and strong in the Lord, knowing that he would carry her through that as well.
Grayson, what was going through your mind during all of this and when you realized that you had a new heart?
Well, like my mom said, the day that she walked into the room and she told me I received a heart, they had a heart for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had just had a feeling that morning that it was the day and it was the final day.
Yeah.
And then the nurses and the doctors tell you all the things that could happen. But I knew that God would be with me, and I knew that whatever happened would be for his glory.
Yeah.
And once the surgery went well, and once I received my heart, I was so happy, and I was just so joyful and happy to be off that machine.
Wow.
And that the surgery had gone good, and it was just so wonderful to be free from all of it.
But what is life like now, Grayson, for you?
Well, life is pretty much back to normal, except I take medicine every morning and every night. And at first, in the hospital, that was very hard. But now, because I take pills, and I had never taken pills before, but I take them every morning and every night, and it's very easy for me now, and it's just kind of like my daily routine. So,
sure.
And at school, I can do anything that anybody else can do.
Wow.
And so I'm just so happy that I was able to go back to it. And
so, Robin, the heart is functioning at 100% capacity now? Or?
Absolutely. You know, when you receive a beautiful, healthy heart, it's all good. And a heart transplant surgery itself is, of course, very common and is not that difficult. And Grayson has a, you know, perfectly healthy heart, and she has no restrictions whatsoever physically. One thing, when they do a heart transplant, they cannot reconnect nerves in certain areas. And so, for instance, when Grayson's getting ready to be physically active, she kind of has to let her body warm up, maybe a couple minutes, just so it knows, by the way, we're going to start running or something.
We're going to be working out here.
Yeah, we're going to be running up and down the basketball court like she does on her basketball team. You know, and then a mild cool down as well to let it have the chance to cool down. But other than that, literally, she has no restrictions whatsoever. And you would never know. I mean, you would never know looking at her. Immunosuppressant drugs that they have now are amazing. The drugs that she takes, so her heart will not be rejected by the body. You know, they've just made such strides with that as well.
Is
so
this something she has to take for the rest of her life then?
For the rest of her life, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
That's right.
When you look back, Robin, at all that you and your family and your daughter has gone through, can you think of some of the toughest times that you had to go through that come to mind for you and your family?
Certainly. I mean, first of all, would be that first night watching your child suffer. And Grayson was calling out to us that night at Christmas Eve as she was not getting enough oxygen. And I tell you, it makes your stomach turn. And she just was looking to us for help, and we could do nothing. And as a parent, any of us that are parents know that that's our worst nightmare.
Yeah.
And that scenario happened over and over again in the hospital. And one particular day that happened, and Grayson was having a very painful procedure, and they had to redo it about four different times in a row, and it just wasn't inserting correctly into her chest and so on. And she cried out to me, and I was standing in the room, and I thought, I can do nothing. And I stepped behind this curtain that was in the room, and I just lost it, and I wept, and I cried out to God, and he told me, he said, you know, I know what it's like to watch your child suffer. And he does.
Wow.
But all I can tell you is that God is so good, and his strength is so perfect when we don't have any. And I met him every morning of every day to ask for strength for myself and as a mom, and how can I encourage Grayson today and be strong for her. And I was missing our boys terribly because I didn't get to see them very often, and it's awful, you know. But I tell you this, he never, ever, ever, not once, left me hanging. He gave me enough strength and Grayson and all of us for whatever we would face that day. And he says, don't worry about tomorrow, you know. Worry about today. And that was a great lesson for me. And also the message that's in Psalm 46:10, be still and know I am God, is such a beautiful message that, you know, we've all heard that verse, but ironically, I had bought a plaque at a Christian bookstore that November prior to the December when all that happened, and I had it in my closet, and I had grabbed it when I ran home and brought it to the hospital, and it sat in the hospital the entire time we were there. And there were so many times when I needed to be reminded of the fact that I just needed to be still and know that he is God. And our lives are so busy and filled with so many things, some of them so wonderful. But they steal our time, and we're often not still. And we often are not still enough to hear
right.
his voice. And that was another lesson I learned. Just waiting for his perfect timing, you know, was such a huge thing, like I said earlier, and knowing that he has a plan. That night in the hospital in the emergency room, Christmas Eve night, they had asked me to step out when they were going to do rounds. They don't like everyone to be around.
Right.
And I said, oh, okay. So I was going to go out to the waiting room for a little while. And I quietly whispered in Grayson's ear, Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. And it was during the time when I stepped out that Grayson went downhill, and we came back in, and she was delirious at that point. But, you know, and when she came out of, when she had gone through the surgery up in Gainesville now and had received the Berlin heart, we were praying for, Lord, give us the right words to explain to our daughter what has just happened to her. She knew she was sick, but now she's hooked to a machine, and she's waiting for her heart. And, you know, how do we even explain this to our little girl? And we prayed and prayed, and so many were praying along with us. And, you know, she totally got it. God gave us the words. And she said, she couldn't even barely talk, and her arms were so weak. And she said, Jesus saved me. I love him. And she said, he can do miracles, and I am a miracle. And then she said, I love you, Mommy, and I love you, Daddy. And these were the first words that she spoke to us after being in a coma for 8 days. You know, we knew she had been with the Lord. So I can't even, I mean, I could talk all day about the beautiful things God showed us, you know.
How do you think this would have gone for you and your family if you were not a person of faith?
You know, that's a great question. All I can tell you is that we wouldn't have survived. And it's interesting, in the hospital, they had never really seen a family like ours. They later informed us, and these doctors and nurses become your family when you live in a hospital. And many, many families that end up in a hospital with their child that's ill, they are not intact families, and they are not families of faith, many of them. And so what they see, according to them, is that these families just fall apart very quickly because they don't have, you know, some sort of belief system and the strong faith and hope. They don't have hope. And I know that without faith, hope and love and peace and just God's great grace and mercy, we never would have made it through this unscathed. And, you know, we've learned so much. You've been through a trial, but you see all these blessings that come with it. You hear people say this probably all the time, but it truly is and has been a blessing, and we continue to just be on this journey and see where the Lord takes us.
Grayson, you are now 11 years old, 11 and a half?
Yes.
Okay, and what plans do you have for life? What are your plans?
Yes, well, this whole journey and all that has happened, during it I grew to be more with God, and I grew a bigger relationship with him. And I, like my mom said earlier, I have always loved to sing, and it's just something that I've loved
like
to do my whole life. And so I like to go with my dad, and my dad and I do church services, and I share the word through a song that's called Healer.
Mm-hmm.
And about how God is our healer, and he's with you through everything. And so I just hope that I can continue to do that in the future and share his miracle with more people.
You have also written a book with your father, Grayson
yes.
Song. Tell me a little bit about that effort.
This book that we wrote is just for people who really need some inspiration, and they need some, like, help in the hospital, or if they're just going through a trial in their daily life. And I hope that we can just help people through that, and that they can see it, that we've been through it, and it's turned out good. And so I just pray that they'll be able to see that also.
Well, Grayson, you sound like a sweet girl.
Thank you.
I wish you well. The title of the book is Grayson's Song, A Journey of Facing Crisis and Finding Hope. We've been talking to Grayson and her mother, Robin, Robin Den Besten. Robin, is there a website we could direct our listeners to find out more about what you've been talking about?
Absolutely. We set up a website. It's called Grayson.org, and her name is G-R-A-C-Y-N, Grayson.org. And there are some video interviews on there, and people can order the book on there. It's truly an inspirational book. It's funny. Sometimes I'll flip through it occasionally. You know, yeah. There'll be one sitting around at the house, and I'm brought to tears again, and sure. The Lord shows me something new. Just the other day it happened, and I just wept probably for a good minute, just tears yeah. of sheer gratitude.
Sure.
The book is from Chris's heart and his recollection, but it is our story, and there are journal entries that I put on the website all through the journey that we are on, and we journaled every day on this website so people could hop on and see what was going. And many of those journals are incorporated in the book, and Grayson as well. Chris interviewed Grayson at the end of each chapter, and she shares her views about what he's written in that chapter and what it meant to her at the time, or what the Lord showed her. And there was no question that Grayson had spent time with the Lord, and it's such a beautiful thing as she recalls these things, and it's very matter-of-fact as she shares it with us, and much of that is in the book. It's pretty amazing. But Grayson.org is our website,
okay.
And it's just a blessing to sure. be able to share our story truly. We hope to encourage.
Do you think your story will be a movie someday?
You know, that's so funny. Somebody else had said that to us. You know, if God wants that to happen, sure. If he has that as part of the plan, you know, sign us up. And that's really how the book came about. People had asked us when we came home from the hospital finally. They said, gosh, you know, you should put some of your journal entries, all those journal entries together. They were like, you know, devotionals for all of us. Why don't you make a book? And we really didn't think about it, but we thought, Lord, if you want us to do something like that, please make it known. And that's exactly what happened for Chris. And he had already written another book a few years ago, and he is a gifted writer. And just this last January, he sat down, and within 2 months, he had written this beautiful book, Grayson's Song. And he knew that, you know, it was something the Lord had for him to do. And
this all started 2 years ago on Christmas Eve.
This year
on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
What are some things that go on in your house? What are some of your thoughts?
That go on in our home?
That go on in your home, and some of your thoughts being the 2 year anniversary.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, the 1 year anniversary was quite something. And
yeah.
Grayson, the year everything happened in 2008, she was supposed to sing at our church that night. She was going to sing right. Away in the Manger, a solo. And she was looking forward to it, and of course that didn't happen. And so just last year on Christmas Eve, our pastor had her sing, and I can tell you it was quite special. And so as we approach Christmas again, you know, it's weird. Different things, different scents and different smells and different things going on kind of take you back, and sometimes not in a good way. But at the same time, you know, we rejoice in what the Lord has done, and it just reminds you over and over that miracles absolutely happen. And if I could say, we often think a miracle is just this huge act, and, you know, let's part the Red Sea. Well, miracles, what we learned were miracles are these beautiful, can be so small and beautiful, but if we're so busy, we miss them, you know?
Yeah.
And we truly have this front row seat day after day to these miracles. And so if I could just say for everyone out there, miracles absolutely happen, and we just need to be still enough to see them.
Yeah. And never give up.
Never give up. That's right. And that's why we have hope.
Sure.
You know, Jesus died on the cross so that we could have hope. And every day in that hospital, we had hope because he had already died for all of that suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you cling to.
Sure.
You know, life becomes very simple when you're faced with a crisis. It becomes very cut and dry, and you know where your strength can come from, and that's from the Lord. And you have to make a choice. You know, you're not going to try to do it on your own.
Would you say that your life is back to normal, whatever that is, new normal?
Absolutely. Yeah. It is so normal. And, you know, it's funny. I just was I just mentioned how I was flipping through the book the other day and wept out of sheer gratitude. Well, that doesn't happen every day. Life is normal. We have three kids. We have sports and school and on and on and on. And, you know, our Chris's business, you know, has experienced just crazy economic issues over the last 3 years. So all of that's, you know, going on as well. And so, yeah, life takes over and it settles back in. But at the same time, you can stop, and I mean, I might stop and just look at Grace and just think, wow, you know, and become very emotional. Or, you know, we'll all be sitting down as a family, like at Thanksgiving, and we all go around the table, what are you thankful for? And you know what, we're here, we have our health, oh my goodness, you know. You see things in a different way.
Life is precious.
You don't take as many things for granted. Sure. And I'm thankful for that.
Sure.
I'm so thankful.
My guest, Robin Den Besten and Grayson, I want to thank both of you for joining us on the program today. We ran a little bit long, but I thought it was important that we got more of the story in for our listeners. So, appreciate what you've done and what you've gone through, and our prayers are with you, you and Grayson, and blessings on you and your family.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and have a merry, merry Christmas.
And the same to you.
Up there in cold Minnesota.
And merry Christmas to you as well. Blessings.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Northland Notebook is also a podcast and archived online at wwjc.com. Back tomorrow on the broadcast, Mothers of the Bible and William Murray, Religious Liberty Issues.